Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with...
Nehal Joshi.
Who plays...
Amir.
And...
Ivy Vahanian.
Who plays...
Emily.
In the new show, Disgraced, at Arena Stage now through May 29th. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, before we dive into this, someone just give us a quick summary of what this sucker's about. Who wants to take it?
Come on, Nehal.
The play, our two characters, it follows our two characters. I play Amir, who's a Pakistani-American lawyer at a predominantly Jewish law firm in New York City, a pretty high-powered one, and he's on a partnership track there. She plays my wife, a contemporary Caucasian artist who uses Islamic art in her artwork, and it's the story of a dinner party that we have that sort of spirals out of control and turns into this rumination on ethnicity and faith and politics.
And it's a bit of a ironic reversal of expectations, right? Like, you're the one who is a little skeptical of, you know, radical, I guess, Islamic extremism, and you're sort of like, no, this culture has a lot to offer.
Absolutely.
Okay, explain why that flip is sort of an interesting take on it.
Well, I think that because everybody is searching for something, and it is about identity and about... And that you see different sides to, you know, what something has to offer. And I think as Emily, it really is that I'm, I guess through the exposure, because I think that I've known about Islam before my husband. It wasn't like, right, you know, we got together and so then I decided to delve into it. I think it was something interesting on my own track, but right, maybe made me feel more connected to him. Who knows, you know, but I think that... in searching for that, because it does, it brings us together and then it pops us apart as well. So because we don't see the same.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a 90-minute play, right? It's fast,
yeah,
and furious.
It's
and
a pressure,
funny parts, but it's also
it's a pressure cooker of a play. I mean, the audience, you can hear a pin drop in the audience through it, and then at certain points you can hear an entire audience gasp, which is kind of a thrilling experience to have. I don't know.
It's
what makes theater so great is that, you know, you're experiencing something that's happening right in front of you, right in the moment, and everyone can feel it together, which I think is sort of the remarkable thing about the experience of coming to see our play.
And it's an original play. Like, who wrote it? And, you know, tell me about the creation of this.
Yeah. Okay. Ayad Akhtar is he's the author. And I actually read his novel, American Dervish, beforehand. But, I mean, it really feels like a playwright who's also searching for himself and trying to use this. But I appreciate so much about it. It's such an efficient script. It's an incredible script. And like a friend of mine, actually, PJ Pepperelli, it was at his theater. He found this play originally in Chicago. And I don't know the year though, Nehal. Do you remember?
It was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So 2012. But yeah, we've had, or at least the response to some of the audiences have been a lot like, well, they get frustrated with what they perceive as a stereotype.
Right.
And I can understand that. But at the same time, this play seems to, it's like, oh, everything is so interwoven for us. But they are archetypes to me more so. And you need a structure of these right, sort of things that we can latch on to then bust it open. Mm-hmm. So... I think that's what he's doing. He's an incredible writer. It's an incredible script. I feel very lucky to get to delve into it.
Yeah, it's the 2013 Pulitzer Prize winner for drama. It's also the most produced play in America right now. And Ayad is only the third writer of color to hold that distinction in the history of the stats that they've been keeping about this. So I think that's a really, truly extraordinary thing for him. He's an up-and-coming writer, you know, so you'll be hearing a lot more from him, which I think is incredibly exciting for theater and for pretty much all of art. I mean, who knows? He may start writing films. Who knows? But he's a really extraordinary writer. And the play, I mean, I think everybody can identify with it because everyone has an idea of perception, the person they think they are on the inside and the person that people see them. And everyone has problems with that. And I think that at the core is what this play is about.
Mm.
And it's the way that we find our humanity in our ethnicities that causes problems for all the characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about, you know, let's say one of our listeners, when they come see the play, what might they take away in terms of they went into the show thinking one thing's about a Muslim American or Muslims abroad in general? And what, you know, what will they learn over the course of it?
Well, there was a 2010 2010 Times Magazine poll that said that 60% of Americans have stated that they've never even met a Muslim.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, that's incredible.
And so I think that's a crazy statistic. Yeah. And
Maybe they have or they don't know it.
Yeah, but that's an incredible stat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think if nothing else, the acknowledgement of other ethnicities about their struggles, and not just the fear that some of the rhetoric that is being placed in America, that is being portrayed in America to deal with the fear that some people have towards Islam, is a way to sort of assuage that fear, is coming to see our place, seeing a human character trying to struggle with being American and trying to deal with the issues of Islam in America now. I think that's an important thing for people to listen to and to think about. Because we're not just a black and white country, right. You know what I mean? We're a country of many different colors.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
And all those colors sort of fit together to make us who we are.
Sure.
And culturally, I think, you know, we have a talk back after every single show, which is incredible.
Like a Q&A with the audience?
Yeah, and not with the actors necessarily, okay. But there is a handful that we're at. But to hear people talk and how this leaves people and how affected they are really deeply, you know, and with their own stories, or whether, you know, you really hear from someone how it makes them look at themselves in relationship to what, you know, what they feel like is in their bones, mm-hmm. what they've learned through, you know, just being alive with their parents, with their culture, with their cities, with their, you know, their religions, all of these things. So, it's fascinating.
And the great thing about it is it's not a preachy play. There's no, it's not a morality lesson. It doesn't shame you for feeling a certain way. In fact, it can actually, depending on how you feel, it can actually affirm your feelings, which I think is sort of the interesting thing about the play, you know?
Everyone takes away their own.
Yeah,
what
they can.
You
can.
To it,
yeah,
what you take away.
Yeah, and I mean, you could see the play many times and follow have a completely different idea of it, which I think is really fascinating about.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people that say I want to see it again because it is just a 90-minute, like a, you know, a rocket ride, and then you want to be able to really hear or see all of the intricacies and just to get it all, and it's very emotional. People after, I mean, they're really like. Stunned a lot of them. So they need that time to process. A lot of the audience stays actually to talk about it. It's incredible.
Speaking of that and the talk back and, you know, talk about how that is sort of the, you know, is that sort of the point of arena stage? I mean, talk about how this is like an arena for us to, you know, it's almost like a town hall meeting.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's an arena for us.
Exactly.
Yeah. Never heard about it that way. Is that why they named it that way? If that's my time machine question, if I'm in a time machine, I'm going
to
steal that, Jason.
You're free to use that. I like it. Proper attribution for it. I'm sure I'm worth
it. Absolutely. Yes, I will quote you.
Speak to the idea of we're all, you know, we're in the arena. It's like a town hall meeting where people are. It's similar to like a political town hall where you're coming and you're bringing your fears, you're bringing different ideas of it, and just talk about how that's healthy for us. It's a conversation we need to have.
Absolutely. I think that people actually, I mean, I've heard that too sometimes. You know, Nehal's, we go back, he's shown me the door to get in to the back of the theater to listen. And how much people are grateful for it, too. They say, wow, that we get to watch this on stage, to have to be challenged, you know, then to have to look at ourselves and then to be able to talk about it. Just a lot of people have been grateful because I thought maybe it would happen more. Sometimes you think, and you'll hear, I talked with the dramaturg who for our show, Linda, and she moderates a lot of them. And she said, there's maybe been only one flippant comment, you know, because sometimes you would think maybe somebody would just come in and go, blah.
Right.
But they don't. People really are talking. I mean, people get emotional. They cry. They're, you know, they're really bringing.
Really
and I think
thoughtful
very thoughtful. And DC is a very intelligent audience. Yeah. You know, it's sort of a different level, but.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said is true, but I think it's true of any theater. Right. And I think arena is sort of, I used the phrase lighthouse last night because I feel like the building that they've built there in the waterfront is in a kind of way, kind of like a lighthouse in a strange way.
I'm going to have to steal that.
Yeah. and because it's one of the bigger theaters in town, it's responsible for leading the entire community here. Mm. And it's important to have theater, especially in a time like now, where we become increasingly isolated by our devices, like right here in the studio, we're surrounded by all these computer screens. Right. Like we're complete.
I can't see your right eye.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But we're complete. Exactly. I mean, we come at a time period where we're isolated. We're constantly being isolated because of our ability to get information quickly, right. Or So it's important to have a place where we can all come together and have a shared experience as people, that we can, you know, we can tell our stories as a community, because that's how stories get handed down.
Yeah.
That's from civilization to civilization,
yeah.
You know? And I think it's important for people to come, you know, if nothing else, even if it's not our play, even if it's just whatever. I think it's important for people to be together and experience things together.
What I think is really special, though, too, about this production and about this cast and about this director and about the Lighthouse in a sense of arena and the support that they give us, is that because of these other things and how people are pulled in many other directions, the way that we've been asked to rehearse this show with the amount of honesty and love and presence, I mean, it puts us in this focused way of dealing with one another on an incredibly real level. And I think that that's been very palpable for the audiences. I think that they go in there going, wow, look at, we have a deep love for one another in this cast. And yeah. And I think that's a really, that's a special thing to see.
That's why we can say horrible things to each other.
Exactly. It's like a family.
Like a family. I mean, our play is kind of like that Thanksgiving meal where somebody has too much to drink and somebody says something. You're like, Aunt Becky, please. And then Uncle Joe gets in on Aunt Becky. And then you're like, oh, I don't know how this is going to end.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Who knows? Who knows? It changes nightly. No.
Talk about, you know, now that we're laughing, talk about some of the more comedic elements in this, because obviously it deals with very serious stuff as well. But, you know, talk about the comedic side to some of it.
Well, you know, there's always comedy and misunderstanding or, you know, that. So, yeah, it's a funny play, especially at the beginning, is because, you know, it's I'm trying to handle this situation. Most people deal with insecurities or uncomfortable things by making jokes. I know I do all the time. And so it is incredibly funny. And we also, there's an African-American character in the play. And, you know, a lot of her role is to play this sort of, for lack of a better word, the kind of metaphor of old prejudice, the idea of knowing prejudice. And she gets so many great one-liners in that, where, you know, this is kind of a spoiler. So, but there's one point where he's talking to me about what it's like to go to airports and go through airline security. And she says she thinks it's admirable that I kind of just allow myself to offer myself up to be searched rather than, you know, being forced to be picked out of line. And he turns to her and he says, it's racial profiling. And she says, I know it is. I know what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And she gets a million of these one-liners. And I think it's, I mean, and the play is full of those. And I think the comedy helps to sort of make it human.
And did you say that it's set in New York City, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. It's obvious, but explain the importance of having it set there. Do you think we're all sort of still in this PTSD from what happened, you know, 15 years ago in New York City, 9/11?
Well, I mean, I think it can be part of it. We do talk about 9/11 in the play, and it is incredible to me in some ways, and I was in New York when that happened, you know, to hear the reaction, you know, the response and what that is. So I think it's a part of it.
It's deep. No, I mean, the Freedom Tower is on our set, actually. Mm-hmm. If you look, it's actually on our set. It might be
every day.
Actually on our set if you look out the window, because the apartment that we live in is actually probably up around 59th and Lex for anybody who is a New Yorkophile.
Madison, honey. It's Madison.
Or it could be Madison. Mm-hmm. That's true. That's a little Easter egg for all the people who are coming to see our show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is. I mean, because 9/11 still hangs very heavily over our culture. And I think we're just now, like, you know, 15 years later, getting to a point where we can talk about it, you know.
Well, but I also think that we're given the platform, like this play, that hits you on so many levels. I mean, there's the intellectual level, but there's the emotional level. And I think that's why people are so, you know, like a mess about it, or able then to have a conversation, because they see these people up there really in their ugliest sort of purest form, you know, and beautiful as well. You know, I mean, all of those things. And then it starts a conversation. Right. It gives, and I don't know if we've had that before.
Yeah, and 9/11 didn't just happen to New York. No, I mean, I was working across the street from the Pentagon on 9/11 here in D.C. I was at the old Clark Street Playhouse, which is now, I think, Boeing now took over the building. I mean, literally every day when you go to work. Yeah, every day when I, and now there's those beautiful soccer fields there. But like every day when I go to work, you could see it
right by the soccer field.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's, it's this town was affected by it, too. So, you know, these plays like this where you could talk about it, there's a level of catharsis, I think, that happens.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, kind of the important thing. Because it's not as raw as it used to be. So now we can figure out how it all came together in a more thematic, like a more cultural way, not just the actual facts of the thing.
Right.
Absolutely. What other sort of, I mean, we don't, obviously we've dealt with the
We're
terrorism
so serious.
The fears, but what, yeah.
What, We're so what serious.
Are, what are some of the other elements of, you know, Muslim American life and culture that are explored here? That the what are, you saw
Well, she
that
talks about the art.
Yeah.
Well, she talks about the art, and I think, you know, it's funny. Yeah. A lot of people want to think that the playwright is my character, Amir, but actually, Ayad says that he is equally Emily, the character, Ivy's character, who plays my wife, as I am. You know, he speaks very eloquently about Islamic art.
I don't know, do you want to say something?
Well, I just, I think that, yeah, I think, I mean, and I have, this is the joy of being an actor too. You get to then, you know, it sort of steers you in another way that maybe you haven't researched or looked at before and all of those things. And there, you know, I recently went to a friend of mine, her house, she lives in Bethesda, right? Is that where? But she, you know, in her 60s has picked up the tabla, which is a drum, you know, and she plays this, but, and the harmonia. But when I was there and with her incredible master, her teacher, who is, you know, he's from Afghanistan, but the being in that room with that experience, it really did inform another level of my character, like the joy and the, because I don't have a religious, you know, draw to it. It's not about the religion whatsoever or about, you know, we talk about the Quran a lot, you know, and how certain passages and this and that. It's not that. It's to understand that. But it is that we do. And I say we draw on the Greeks and the Romans. But Islam, especially for art, is a lot of what we come from and the beauty and this level of being, you know, we are so egocentric here in this country.
Totally.
And so to open those things up and that is a beautiful life-affirming thing, because I think, you know, there is a shroud and there is this whole thing about, you know, Islam as being this dark and sort of, you know, frightening place and all of these things that and women are treated a certain way and there's this and that. But just so to see my friend, though, and see this, like, this radiating joy, really, there are absolutely those aspects. And if we don't remember that about every other different person than us in the world, we're just going to implode, I think. Yeah. You know, it's just going to go further and further inward, you know.
Is this a continuing conversation? We had the director of the Malala documentary. We talked to him.
Yeah.
It's something that's popping up a lot more. And do you think we're going to see only more of this?
I hope so. I mean, I think on some level, Islam has a PR problem, you know, and that is because there's no centralized figure, I think, in Islam. The way that, I mean, for whatever your feelings are about the Pope and, you know, Catholicism, at least the Pope can, in some level, be a centralized speaker.
Right.
And there's lots of other centralized speakers for Christianity. Everyone from Joel Oldstein to, like, I you know, that. Like, there's lots. In Islam, especially in America, we don't have a lot of those figures.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so there's not anybody to say, this is right, this is wrong, or, you know, this is how I feel about this. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you also deal with the translation issue, because most of the Islam is written in other languages. So you're also dealing with a translator's idea of a word. And, you know, and that's always tough, you know. So I think the more that we talk about it, the more that we can understand it, the more that we can have our own opinions and make our own reactions. Because I think it's the only way that you can live as a human being. Right. You know what I mean?
And you have the also, I mean, without having those central figures or to give a sort of a cleaner sense of it, you also have, you know, then you have the other end where it's sensationalized and everybody's a terrorist and you know what I mean? And all of those things. So it's just like fear driven home, you know, so.
Yeah.
That fights against that as well, to just trying to see something for what it is.
Well, yeah, thanks and for cutting through the fear, guys.
It's easier to get a ticket to our show than Hamilton, really. So I think that's really the most important thing.
Just announced today that Hamilton's coming to Kennedy Center in 2017.
Well, there you go.
First come to disgrace. Why is it called disgrace? Is that a spoiler to say, or can we give a little teaser?
It is a spoiler, but the I think disgrace.
Is there a way to say it without spoiling it?
The phrase disgraced. No, I'm trying to sort of formulate an idea that doesn't include spoilers. I would just say the term means that all of us on some level have disgraced our past, and it's the idea of dealing with that and how to deal with the things that you're not so proud of.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the title means.
And I'm not being
but it's also
with
in the play, so listen to it for it, because it comes up in a very important part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully by the end, find a little shred of grace by dealing with those demons.
I hope so. I mean, I think there's hope in it. A lot of people feel negative about it, but I think that there's actually hope to be found in the play, because
absolutely,
I'm an eternal optimist. So
absolutely,
you're
yeah.
And I mean, like anything, sometimes you have to destroy everything to make yourself new again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's hopeful. And I think, you know, we've done that as Americans so many times, and we're a really young country comparatively.
In the grand scheme, yeah, we really are.
And so I think it's super hopeful for all the characters in the play.
Mm-hmm.
Will an individual...
Because nobody dies.
Well, there you go.
So there's a spoiler alert.
Yeah, well,
so there you go.
I can't say that in Hamilton.
Can't say that in Hamilton.
take that, Hamilton.
Yeah.
So do you think, let's say, a listener that listens to this, will they go in and destroy themselves only to be made new again when they come out?
Wow, that's deep.
That's a lot.
That's
deep.
I know. I'm real melodramatic, aren't I?
Well,
I'm super melodramatic.
You can only hope. I mean, I do think that people go in and are, and when they come out, or at least that, you know, because of course we don't see everybody, you know, but the people that we've spoken with or that have been vocal, you know, there is this level of like, because it's like, you know, you have the reaction, like you're being slapped. Whoa, you react to it. And then maybe you step back and try to look at, okay, you know, you have a little bit of time. And I think that that's what happens with this, is people have an incredible reaction, their bodies, their minds, their voices. And then they, hopefully with some time, will be able to go back through and talk about it.
Right.
That's the best part. They
get to
talk about it.
I think it's a breaking of perception. You know, you're talking about breaking something down. I mean, it's going back to what we were talking about before. Perception is such an interesting thing, because everything you hear on some level is prejudiced. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could hear something about somebody and be like, oh, I hear Jason is like this, you know? And somebody could tell me that. And I don't actually know that from knowing you. I've heard it from somebody else. So now I think, oh, Jason is like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I meet you, I go, oh, wait, Jason's not like that at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm making up my own assumption. Now I'm making up my own opinion about you. And I think that's what our play sort of does. It's like you hear things about certain cultures, certain groups of people. And some of those stereotypes are actually presented in our play, and you go, wait, that's not right, or that's wrong, or that seems not real. You know what I mean? And I think that's sort of the importance of our play.
Right.
And I think that it's also, I hope that people will, you know, like I said, because there have been some reactions to like, oh, well, there's this stereotype, or why did he have to do that? That seems so predictable, or something, you know. But at the same time, it's like you need to fill the envelope. You need to fulfill it in order to then get through to the other side.
Right.
And I hope that then people will not just stop themselves there at the stereotype, but to actually look what's beyond that, or what you know, sort of what pushed it through. So
like what that vehicle is. For. Yeah. Okay.
Hmm.
Tell me about yourselves. Where'd you get so you're Bert, and you said New York, maybe?
I'm from Erie, Pennsylvania originally.
Oh,
and
okay.
And then I lived in New York for 11 years.
Wow.
I live in Santa Barbara now.
Wow. And you're already all the way here.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. How did you get into acting? Then it's your turn.
Yeah, into acting. Well, I was in my eighth grade play where I was the dying woman in the desert. It was called The Other Wise Men, because in my, you know,
the dying woman in the desert. Do you have any lines from The Dying Woman in the Desert?
No, I don't.
Clearly,
but you know what's I did. But what was amazing is that my father is an artist, and my mother owns a gallery. So I've as Emily being this artist, I have an inside track in a way. But I said to my dad, Dad, you know, I need sand on the stage, and I need jewels, because they're
deep.
Supposed to be jewels. Even then, no, come on.
Actor.
Wow,
so,
I,
and he made me these amazing.
Before we go in here,
little female Marlon Brando
that,
running around Erie, Pennsylvania.
Oh, and so I went full on. But that was really, you know, I grew up a dancer younger, and then my grandmother was a singer. And so, yeah, that's when it started, though.
The eighth grade. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I played Liza Doolittle and My Fair Lady.
Really?
I didn't in the eighth grade.
Henry Iggins.
Anyway, yes.
Did you?
Oh, God.
Where was that? That was in Erie?
In Erie. Uh-huh. Okay. In Erie. Yeah.
All right. Well, how'd you get to New York on time?
Well, I went to school in Pittsburgh. I went to Carnegie Mellon for musical theater, actually. And my senior year, I switched into the acting, just the straight drama program, because I just knew that that's where my heart was. And then I moved to New York after that.
Cool.
You know.
Mm-hmm. What shows did you do up there before heading to Santa Barbara?
Oh,
I'd like to know the whole story.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, gosh. He's got a lot more. But I mean, you know, I did Toys in the Attic. I've, you know, just done things off Broadway, on Broadway. Mm-hmm. I did Quorum Boy on Broadway. And then, I've worked with Timothy twice before, the director for this show. Mm-hmm. And I feel
Douglas?
Timothy Douglas, yeah.
He was awesome.
He's amazing.
He's been here a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's great.
He's tremendous. So I would kind of follow him anywhere. And we talked about this last year, actually, when I think it was March, and we were having lunch in New York. And we talked about it. And he said, yeah, thinking about you for something. And I said, okay, good. Let me look into it. But because my friend PJ, who had just passed away that week, actually, it was really, yeah, it was kind of crazy. So all of these stars aligned in a way, and I feel like it brought me here. So
his friend PJ, is this the one you're talking
PJ
about?
PJ Paparelli, yeah.
Yeah, he was an associate artistic director of the Shakespeare Theater, mm-hmm. actually, here.
With Michael.
For a
yes.
while. And then he actually followed Molly's job. He took Molly's mm-hmm. Smith job, the artistic yeah. director of Arena in Alaska at the Perseverance, and then he ran this theater. He went from there to run this theater in Chicago.
Awesome.
Great guy.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
so what, you were in Santa Barbara and you met with Tim?
I'm in Santa Barbara. No, I met him in New York, but okay. I'm in Santa Barbara. I started a theater company in Santa Barbara. So, you know, I think we've produced 5 shows now. Yeah. There's a show opening tomorrow there that they're doing.
Oh,
so
yay.
Yeah.
Mary. All right. Mm-hmm. How about you, sir? So you're in Burke, Virginia.
I'm from Burke, Virginia. Yeah.
How did you get into performing?
I don't
was
really
it lost
actually.
In the
it's
desert,
sort of. It kind of was lost in the desert. It kind of was. I went to James Madison University.
Okay.
So I'm real local.
Yep.
I'm a Duke. My sophomore year of school, I got to study at the Globe in London. They did a summer abroad, and
cool.
they gave some money. One of the professors there had given money, and he got a partnership with the Globe. Well, Mark Rylance was the artistic director, who has
really?
Just won the Academy
He's an
Award.
Oscar winner for yeah. Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And so I got to go over there and work with some of the actors there. And while I was there, I was a biology major. I was trying to be a doctor, I thought. I was going to be a doctor. Now I'm still trying to play one on TV. I worked with the actors, and they, you know, a couple of them were like, you could do this for a living if you wanted to do this. And I thought, maybe I do. And then I went to the Actors Theatre of Louisville and became an apprentice there for a year. And then I came back here and started my career for about 4 years. And then I moved to New York. And I booked my first Broadway show within like 3 weeks of being there, which
wow.
was kind of insane, which was Three Penny Opera with Anna Gasteyer.
Anna Gasteyer,
yeah.
who we just talked to last night.
Yeah, and Cyndi Lauper and Alan Cumming. And
wow.
it was Carlos Leon was in it, who is Lourdes's Madonna's, the father of
yeah,
Lourdes's
yeah.
first, of Madonna's first child, Lourdes. It was a crazy show. And it was kind of a great introduction to a wild ride that's been New York.
Yeah. And how'd you get cast in this?
I had a meeting with Timothy in New York. I had been offered this role a couple times in other places, and I was just sort of trying to figure out where I wanted to do it. And I really kind of wanted to do it here because this is my hometown.
Right.
And so I had a meeting with Timothy, and we had an audition, and I read for it, and it just seemed to sort of click. I mean, Timothy reads with all his own actors, which mm-hmm. is something that a lot of directors do. They don't
right.
actually directly. They like to right. sit in the back and sort of watch you while you're working, but he actually likes to interact with you, so he gets a sense of you as a person, mm-hmm. like the kind of energy you send as an actor, you know. And so I think that, I don't know, we had a successful audition because I'm here, so
yeah, yeah.
something went well, so yeah.
Yeah, he wrote to me and he said, I found your husband. He's amazing. He's like, it's going to be off the chain.
Yeah.
He sent me his picture. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Actually, I wrote that email. It was really...
And then he said,
oh my God, that would make so much sense.
I wrote that email.
And after that he said, there's also someone I want
disclosure.
You to act in the play with.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, right, so, yes.
That's great.
That's
Timothy,
it.
Life
yeah.
manager.
Yeah.
No, he came in here with Andre DeShields. Oh yeah, he was the original Wiz. Remember?
Yeah, no, I worked with Andre. We did. Disney is trying to put Jungle Book on stage as a musical, and Andre and I did that together in Chicago and Boston. Yeah, Andre played King Louie.
I was the father
wolf who takes in Mowgli at the beginning.
Oh right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was Mowgli's father.
He meets a dismal fate.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. Yeah. I know. It doesn't end well for him. But it was a much bigger part.
Carlos Esposito, actually.
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome. Well, yeah. But anyway, he was in here, Tim, and he and Andre said something that I loved because I was talking about how I just took over this entertainment page, and he was like, "Well, you know, the roots of entertainment means to hold and to change, and that's what we're trying to do." I was like, "Love it. I love it.
Yeah. Of course.
You're in the theater and you hold and change." So,
yeah.
How does this play do that?
Well,
Ivy,
I mean, in this show, what I think is so exhausting.
I just want you to know the amount of times we say really in our play actually is like 4 or 5. So when I heard her just say really like that,
yeah,
I've
really
heard that. I literally thought I was right back on stage
when
she said it because I can't see her right now. So it's really kind of extraordinary. I just had like a weird deja vu.
Yes, I kind of did that for you. No.
Okay, go ahead. Keep going.
But really, no.
The way that we, because of how we rehearse this, because of who Timothy is, and because of, you know, I feel like every single, because people also want to come up to us after and have an opinion or say something, and it changes nightly, it changes momentarily for us. And not that, of course, we have a structure, we have the framework, but the way that we're asked to do this and then we ask of ourselves, it changes me every single time. No. And there are things that we hear for the first time or that finally, like you said the other day, Nahal, but like that click in that you're like, wow, I finally got that. So it does hold us because we've created really, I mean, it's a little cheesy, but this sacred space to have this happen. Mm-hmm. And the way that we play with one another is it absolutely affects us on a like a cellular level every single time.
Yeah, I mean, it's kumbaya, but
we're not. Me, he knows.
No, I'm saying it's kumbaya because we're not the same from moment to moment.
No.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? And we've rehearsed this play like we live our lives, mm-hmm. meaning that I don't know what the next words are that are going to come out of my mouth. Mm. I don't know what my hand is doing, but it's like making this broad-armed gesture right now. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know I was going
to
do that. And that's
moment
literally
moment.
That's yeah. literally what we're doing in this show. And that's the way that theater survives, in my opinion. Theater survives by us being in front of you. We can't blow things up like film can.
Mm.
We can't give you a whole year of a story like TV can, you know, with one character. What we can give you, though, is us there living these moments fully right in front of you. You know what I mean? So that you can feel it. And I think that that is the glory of what we do in our business. And I think to change your question a little bit, I think what I want people to get out of this show is just to be willing to be open to ask questions.
Yeah. And for the ride.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and I know, though, you say that, Nahal, but like, and I agree. And I think that that's how he's tremendous to work with. I've enjoyed like watching and learning and growing with being his partner on stage. But I think that not all actors, though, do that. I mean, I think they do to a certain extent because there is a necessary presence to be on stage. But like, even talking with our stage manager, you sort of go, okay, you write the score and that's what it is. And then they keep that score for you or whatever. And this show, though, we're not... You know, she comes back maybe to talk to us a little bit. Oh, this is getting here. But as long as it's truthful, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And
it's
so,
like jazz. It's like we're playing jazz out there.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tune, but, you know, how we get to that tune sometimes is different.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we're forgetting, guys? I think does the whole thing play out in this apartment?
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing is in the apartment.
Yeah, and beautiful set by Tony Chizik. Yeah, it's gorgeous. I mean,
the set we saw on a gas dire on.
Exactly.
That we saw on a gas dire on
it's our
last
home.
Night.
She was a guest in your home.
She was.
Airbnb is Airbnb is getting real crazy. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, guys,
well, I'm so excited to be here. Oh, my God. I grew up listening to WTOP. So I'm
really?
Yeah.
I grew up watching your guys' eighth grade plays. Yeah. Miri and Burton. Are you kidding me?
Like, wow, you're thorough, Jason.
Yeah.
Wow. Your research is real good.
No, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank
really
you.
Thank you.
I'm so looking forward to seeing it. I want to see why
please.
It's disgraced.
Mm-hmm.
Well. You know,
come and talk to us after.
Yeah, I do.
Stay
yeah,
in.
Do.
Yeah.
Do.
And wait, so outside of theater, you also do film acting, right?
I do.
You have a movie in Cannes?
Yes, right
this
now.
This is awesome.
It's incredible. I'm so excited. And it was also in the Santa Barbara Film Festival, which was an exciting thing. We have a great film festival there. And it was, I saw this script and I just had a sense when I met the director as well. And she's just this wonderful contained but incredibly focused filmmaker. And her name is Michelle Lee.
Okay.
And so when I met her and read the script, I just thought, okay, this is something I want to be a part of. And it's actually about a pastor who was married for years to a woman and had children. And then he decided, I mean, he came out that he was gay. And so...
Are you the wife?
I'm the wife. Yes, I'm the wife. And she does it where it's that it's sort of his fears. The film is set where it's real life, real time. And then, you know, spliced into it or fitted into it really is that you get to see, though, his fears and what he really thinks will happen or you know, so. But it was wonderfully done. And I think she's a new filmmaker. Yeah. And it's such an incredible art form. And to actually just even get a film made is an incredible feat. So. Totally. I'm so proud of her, and I would be there. I would be there if I wasn't here.
But you're not here. How long are you here then?
Here until May 30th.
30th. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But then, it runs through the 29th.
And then back to maybe more film acting.
I've done some this year, so it's really I'm venturing into that world a little bit more. I'm in California, so yeah, you know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, sir, what other projects you got? I mean, we'll be equal.
I'm going to take on something small after this, like maybe the Puerto Rican debt crisis. I don't know.
That's a short film.
Is that why we're going down there? No.
No, I have some other projects lined up. I just unfortunately,
it's the Party Factory. That's
you know, when like when the ink isn't dry on the contract, you know, mm-hmm. you just sort of keep your mouth shut. But there's some really exciting things you'll see from me, I hope.
Keep an eye on these two, okay? Not just on the theater, but for now, follow the light of the lighthouse and come to the arena.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Awesome.
Cheers.